This morning we are reading from the book of Numbers again, and we are in chapter 27, Numbers 27, reading verses 1 through 11. Numbers 27, verses 1 through 11. Then came the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, from the families of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. And these were the names of his daughters, Malah, Noah, Haglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. And they stood before Moses, before Eleazar the priest, and before the leaders and all the congregation, by the doorway of the tabernacle of meeting, saying, "Our father died in the wilderness. But he was not in the company of those who gathered together against the Lord, in company with Korah, but he died in his own sin, and he had no sons. Why should the name of our father be removed from among his family because he had no son? Give us a possession among our father's brothers." So Moses brought their case before the Lord, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "The daughters of Zelophehad speak what is right. You shall surely give them a possession of inheritance among their father's brothers, and cause the inheritance of their father to pass to them. And you shall speak to the children of Israel, saying, 'If a man dies and has no son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass to his daughter. And if he has no daughter, then you shall give his inheritance to his brothers. If he has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to his father's brothers. And if his father has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to the relative closest to him in his family, and he shall possess it. And it shall be to the children of Israel a statute of judgment, just as the Lord commanded Moses." This is the word of the Lord. When someone dies, one of the big questions concerns the inheritance. Who is going to get the house? Who will inherit the property? How will the accounts and the investments be divided among the heirs? For some people who are in the running, a share of the inheritance, it would significantly boost your future if you were to inherit. If grandpa leaves you money, it would set you up for real improvements in your life situation. If you were to receive some of the inheritance, you could get the degree that you were hoping for, and it would increase your earning potential. And maybe that would mean you could live somewhere. You could live somewhere better. You could live somewhere with better prospects for security, for comfort. Our passage today deals with five women who will not inherit. Five women who will not inherit. Their father has died. But the legal system under which they live is what we would call patrilineal. That means the line of the family. And the inheritance conveys only through male relatives. But in this family, for these daughters, there are no sons, only daughters. And so that means these women cannot legally inherit. They know that when the will is read, they will receive nothing. So as we look at our text for today, we see three concerns. First of all, why we need a place that lasts. Why we need a place that lasts. And then secondly, why we want a name that is remembered. Why we want a name that is remembered. And then third, how to get a place and a name that endure. Why we need a place that lasts. Why we want a name that is remembered. And how we get a place and a name that endure. Let's start with why we need a place that lasts. In the opening verses here, verses 1 through 4, we're introduced to these five women. They are the daughters of this man, Zelophehad. Zelophehad, their father, has died. Only daughters remain. Zelophehad had no sons. And that means these women will have no place to live. Now, at the moment, they, like the other families of Israel, they're all tent-dwelling nomads. But in Canaan, promised land that they are just about to enter, the nation is about to take possession of the land. When they enter, no land will be given to these five women. Nothing will be allocated to their father's name. There's no brother who will receive the portion of Zelophehad, and maybe he will have this land parcel, and he can take in all of his sisters. That's not in the cards for their future. When the families of Israel receive their land portions, and the other families of Israel settle down, the daughters, the women of Zelophehad, these women will remain nomads. They have no place among the people of the land. Now, why is that? Earlier, Numbers 26, verse 55, "But the land shall be divided by lot. They shall inherit according to the names of the tribes of their fathers." The land is to be divided and assigned according to the fathers. And in those days, the estate, when the father died, it would be evenly divided up among the sons. A double portion would be given to the oldest son. But daughters received nothing at the death of the father, no portion of the estate. And it was the case that when the daughter married, she would be given a dowry, a very sizable dowry, a costly wedding gift. But when the father died, only sons inherited. Daughters received only when they married, but no land, no land. Without brothers, these women would not receive land, would not have a place in the land. Now, on the surface, when you look at this and you look at how it works out, what we read here, it seems like this whole incident, it just involves legal solutions to a property rights question. It seems like it just deals with legislative solutions for housing instability for these women. It seems to only be concerned with a legislative solution that will address gender disadvantages that they are facing. But the predicament of these women highlights two bigger problems. One of them is structural, and the other is existential. Let's first look at the structural problem that they face. These women face, you could say, unfair, severe disadvantage because of their gender. These women cannot have a place among the citizens. The existing legal code, the existing historical practice denied these women legal standing to inherit. So then and now, we all recognize something that seems unfair about this. It meant that no matter how skilled these women were, no matter how capable they were, no matter how industrious and hardworking they were, no matter how many hours they put in on the job, no matter how financially savvy they were and skilled they were, they are denied property rights in their situation. The daughter, Mala, she might have had the wisdom of the woman wisdom in Proverbs 2, that woman wisdom who rightly instructed and called all of the young men of the land to learn from her. She might have had that wisdom, but she could not have a place in the land. Noah, Hoglah, might have had a successful business of their own, of flocks or of the loom. They might have had a booming industry that they had built, employing other people. They would be denied. They would be denied even a single square foot of their own in the land. And so they would have no place for their own flocks, no place for their business. So this is not just an intriguing kind of legal hypothetical puzzle. These women faced substantial, real-world consequences. They were facing homelessness. It was a real threat to them. They were being pressured to marry just in order to get some level of financial security. They were at a severe competitive disadvantage for their businesses. They had to always rent. They could never own. These women faced structural problems which severely disadvantaged them. And disadvantaged people, whatever the situation, whatever the combination of challenges, disadvantaged people matter to God. You see that here. But did you know that not only here, there are about 36 places in the Bible where the Lord speaks of his concern for the fatherless, for the widow, for the immigrant. About 36 places, social concern for the needy. God expresses it 36 or more places. If something about God is repeated that many times, that is enough mentions to tell us this is close to being an attribute of God, his social concern for the needy. Now today we have people who fall between the cracks, people for whom the legal structure or the majority cultural system keeps them disadvantaged in some way that's real for them. It's rightly observed that for many Black Americans, they will have to bring to the table, they will have to supply a higher level of industry in order to be able to achieve the same footing. Their sons and daughters often start the race about 20 yards behind everyone else, half a lap behind the other runners. Why? Why? Because of injustices that were done not to them even, but done to their parents, done to their grandparents. And so they're faced from the starting block with an effort tax, and they have to keep paying that. But apart from ethnicity, apart from your immigration status, isn't it the case that many people, whatever your race, whatever your gender, male or female, whether you are rich or poor, whatever the case, isn't it the case that for many of you, you run into some situation that severely disadvantages you, that has significant real-world consequences for you and for your children? For instance, the child who grows up, perhaps grows up middle-class background, but grows up in a home that is full of neglect. Or the child that grows up middle-class background situation, but grows up in a home full of abuse or a home full of addiction. What will that child be set up for in the future? That sets you up with significant disadvantages that will affect your education, your ability to maintain healthy relationships in the future, your ability to function well in society, your ability to hold together a family of your own. And at best, society and the legal system, they can only try somehow to catch up with your challenges. And so we live in a world with many of these kinds of widespread structural disadvantages, and real people suffer for it. You start the race behind. You have to put in 30% more effort just to finish the race. And even if you work hard and you pay the extra 30% effort, there is no guarantee, there is no guarantee that you will even place at the end. These five women faced a structural problem. They also faced an existential problem. What do we mean by an existential problem? These women, existentially speaking, had no place in the world. They were citizens of Israel. They were descended from one of the 12 tribes, Manasseh, a son of Joseph. But their legal status meant that they were non-entities. They could not inherit. They had no place. Everyone else had a place among the people, but not them. These women lived thousands of years ago, but they did not belong. And even today, people today know that same sense, I don't belong. How many people today have a home but never really feel at home in this world? This week at our Thanksgiving table, we had conversation and people spoke about what makes a place feel like home. What actually feels like home for you? Well, maybe home is a place where you can be yourself without hiding who you are and still be wanted. Maybe home is a place where you're surrounded by beauty, things that move you. Maybe home is a place where you're surrounded by relatives. Whatever it is, it's a place of belonging, of settled belonging and security. But even if you do have a home, and maybe you have a good home, and you're thankful for it, do you know that nagging feeling still that really, you don't belong, This home is good, it's nice, but it's not forever. And even when it is good, I don't quite belong. Even at home, you're not really at home. Something is missing. Fundamentally, you know, no matter how much stuff, no matter however many people there are around you, something is still unsettled inside. No matter who's around you, they don't truly know you. And if they really knew you, the fullness of what's inside, you know, they would step back. They would pull back from you. You can build a friend group. You can build a home. You can build a life work in this world. And yet you still feel out of place in this world. These women knew that they had no place. And so in verse 4, they say, give us a place among our people. You've heard the stories of people who have means, financial means, connections. They have the means to get a place. Maybe they're the media stars who have homes. They have properties. They've got prominence in this life. The successful people who build something big, who make things work, and they're rewarded for it. The people who study hard. The people who work hard, who make the grade. But all of them, at the end of the day, they come home. Some of them come home to families that are intact. Some of them come home to an empty mansion. And ultimately, they sense that they are out of place in this universe. There's this quote from Orson Welles. He said, we're born alone. We live alone. We die alone. Do you sense that you are out of place in this world? That you are not at home, even when you're at home? The daughters of Zelophehad needed a place. We need a place. So we've looked at why we need a place. Now let's look at why we want a name. Why we want a name that is remembered. The daughters here essentially ask for two things. They ask for a place and they ask for a name. Verse 4, why should the name of our father be removed from among his family? Because he had no son. Give us a possession among our father's brothers. So we've talked about how they lacked a place, a possession in the land. What else do they request? They request a name. Why should the name of our father be removed from among his family? Because he had no son. In their system, without a son, the line ended. Without sons, the name of the father, the family line ended. The name was only passed through the son. And so you might ask, well, what if the daughter, one of the daughters of Zelophehad, what if one of them got married? Would the family line continue then? And the answer is no. No. Those daughters married, if they married, into the line of another man, another name. They continued their husband's line, not their father's line. And so if someone like Tirzah married, she continued her husband's line, not her father Zelophehad's line. And that meant at the end of the day, it was the end of the name for these women, the end of their family name. And so they ask, why? Why should the name of our father be removed? Why should it disappear? Give us a name. Give us an enduring name. No children meant no future generations and no genealogy. No genealogy in the future meant no remembrance. Here's what these women faced. Whether we marry and have children, or whether we remain unmarried, we will be forgotten. We and our fathers will fade from the memory of humanity. We have no way of having a thread of connection into the future, to future people who might remember us. We might show up in one of those ancestry genealogical lists. We might have some slender connection to people who might remember, who might care about us. Their situation is this: we are dust. We are grass that has just sprung up for a little season here on the banks of the Jordan. We bloom, we perish. The wind blows over the dirt where we lived. Its place will remember us no more. Now, we don't want to be forgotten, and they didn't want to be forgotten. We want to be known. We want
to be remembered after we die. We want a place. We want a place in the memory of others. Even for people who get their name, though, on a place, on a building. Look around at the buildings that have someone's name stamped on them. How many people in the years, the decades that follow, how many people even know a single significant thing about the person whose name is on a building? What is it that will give you a name, a lasting name? You pursue academic success. You're diligent in your studies. Will being the valedictorian give you a name? Will getting tenure finally give you a name? Or those in the military, will attaining rank give you a name that endures? Will receiving command give you a name that lasts? Or how about in family, will finally getting a husband, finally getting a wife, will that give you an enduring name? That person who, as the years go by, can't remember how you prefer your socks to be folded or ordered in the drawer, or can't seem to remember your anniversary, will they really remember you, know you, and give you a lasting name? Will having children of your own, will having grandchildren give you a lasting name? No. Are you looking for a lasting name there in any of those areas? Because when you do, when you try to sculpt out for yourself some kind of lasting name out of award, out of achievement, out of ancestry, family, human relationships, those things, they're not bad things. They're not inherently bad. They can benefit you, but they cannot give you a lasting name or a place, the name that you actually desire. And if those places are where you try to find a name and a place that endure, you will either end up terribly disappointed when they don't deliver, or you will end up destroying the very things in your attempt to make them deliver the place and the name for you. Well, what do we mean by that? If you look for a name that endures, if you look for your name that endures in your work, in your achievements, in building your labor and your business and whatever, and you don't make the cut, if you get passed over for promotion, it's crippling. It's devastating. When your business that you've worked so hard, so many hours, when your business fails to get a foothold in the market and it just doesn't pan out, you've got nothing. It all bottoms out for you. Or maybe you're determined to get a name, not through effort, but through family, through people, your children. Your children will be your name that endures. And so what do? You overmanage them. You overdirect them. You overcontrol them. You over-involve yourself in their lives, and you end up driving them away from you. You lose your kids. You send them running and putting as much space as they can make between yourself and them. How did we get into this predicament? Living in this life, lacking a lasting place, yearning for an enduring name. When these women, these daughters of Zelophehad, when they made their legal plea, there's this beautiful, poetic, and very philosophically incisive statement that they make here. Verse 3. They said, "Our father died in the wilderness, but he was not in the company of those who gathered together against the Lord, in company with Korah. But he died in his own sin and had no sons." What are they saying? They're saying, our father, Zelophehad, our father was a decent man. He was a decent citizen. He took no part in the civil rebellion that so many other people joined in, but he died in his own sin, and he had no son. He had no sons. What are they saying there? They're saying, ultimately, our father, as decent as he was, he couldn't provide what we desperately needed. He couldn't overcome the structural disadvantages and the barriers that we face. Now, parents are significant. Parents are profoundly significant. But parents can't give their kids what they most need. And that is a hard truth for both parents and for children to face. You can't give your children what they truly need in life. Do you understand that? Your father and mother can't ultimately give you what you truly needed in life. And so they say this as well. He died in his own sin. Their father was decent. He was a good man. But he was only relatively good. He died in his own sins. That's a theological statement that links to the massive theme in the Bible. God made humanity, all people, and he made them very good. But when Father Adam sinned, when that good man sinned, all mankind, by his fall, lost communion with God, are under his wrath and curse, and so we are all made liable to the miseries of this life, to death itself, and to the pains of hell forever. It wasn't the woman, Mother Eve. It was the man, Father Adam. When Adam sinned, all of us, chaining forward endlessly through the generations, all the sons and daughters to come, all of us lost a place. All of us lost a name, lost connection to God, lost the good place in this world, lost connection to fellow humans, and we've been cast out of the place, cast out of the garden. We bite, we tear, we devour one another, like the first son, Cain. Ephesians 2 describes our situation. We are aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope, and without God in the world. Aliens from the commonwealth and strangers to the covenant, that means we have no legal standing to have a place or an inheritance in this land. Without hope, without God in the world, that means we have no lasting place in the world. We have no enduring name in this world. Their father died in his sins. Your father's disobedience to the God, your father's disobedience to the God has put you in this mess. And your own rejection of God and your own disobedience to God has put you in this mess as well. I don't know what you believe about the future 200 years from now, 20,000 years from now, but there is a book called the Book of Life, and it really, really matters if your name is written in that book. Revelation 3 says, those whom God finds worthy have their names written in that book. And those whom God finds not worthy, those names are removed from that book. If your name is not in that book, you'll be shut out from his land. So let's conclude now with how to get a place and a name that endure. These women need a place and a name that endure. So what do they do? What do? They ask God. They ask God, just because our father had no sons, why should our name and our father's name disappear? Give us an inheritance in the land. They ask Moses to ask God. Verse 5, Moses consults the Lord. Verses 6 through 11, God answers their request for a name and for a place. And this shows God's disposition, his heart towards those who are dispossessed, to those who are disadvantaged. He makes a way for these women to have a name. He makes a way for these women to have a place. Verse 7, he says, the daughters of Zelophehad speak what is right. He hears the thoughts. He hears the plea of these women. Women, you mothers, you wives. God hears your thoughts and your prayers. And so in verses 7 through 11, God makes a permanent, legal, structural change to ensure that disadvantaged women in this situation will have a place and will have a name, legal standing, legal rights. These daughters and future women in their situation who would follow them, they will receive an inheritance given to sons. The name of the father and the family will continue through these women. But this good situation, this newer addition, it's not everything. We find later on in the same book, later chapters in this book, and also in later books, there's more about their situation, more that needs to be adjusted. Sometimes the solutions to structural problems have to be improved, have to be refined. In Numbers 36, there are a few more particulars about their situation that have to be worked out. There are some issues which are still not fully addressed. For instance, exactly how is the name of Zelophehad going to be preserved by all of this? If these women, say, for instance, Tirzah, if she marries, how exactly does her family name get passed to her children? Tirzah, daughter of Zelophehad, marries someone. Maybe she marries Tahan, son of Ard. How does the family name of Zelophehad get passed down in that situation? Does the husband, Tahan, lose his own family name in that situation? The laws don't answer that question. How can you get a lasting place? The home that you were meant to inhabit. The place in which you were meant to dwell. How can you get a lasting name? How can you get known and remembered forever? The answer is in the gospel of Jesus Christ. In this text, in the legislative answer to these daughters, there's a good, but it's only provisional. A good provisional solution is given. But it required more details, future amendments. How will the name be passed down? Will the husband of these women lose his own name? Zelophehad died in his own sins and had no sons, and left these women without a place and without a name. In the gospel, Jesus Christ died, not in his own sins, but for our own sins. And he is the son that we needed so that we could inherit a lasting place and an enduring name. By the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who we believe on, when you believe on him, you receive a lasting inheritance that never perishes and can never be taken away. 1 Peter 1 says, those who join themselves to this man, this son, and this name, by the mercy of God, you are born again into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you. This is a gift. It's something that you receive, something that you can't accomplish by your studies, by your merit, by your labor, by your performance. An inheritance is triggered by the death of the giver, the death of another, and the gracious will of the giver of the inheritance. And there's great beauty in this, something lovely in the gospel. Jesus Christ is the husband who dies without sons of his own, without daughters of his own. But when he dies, his name is not forgotten. Jesus, by his death, is given a name that endures forever. Philippians 2, Jesus humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Therefore, God also has highly exalted him and given him the name which is above every name. No one can forget Jesus. His name will endure forever, long after the people of these days come and go and are forgotten. And in the gospel, he gives you his name. Do you sense that in this life, you are one of the dispossessed? You lack a place? You lack a name? We spoke earlier about a book of life. A book of life in which you have to be worthy. You have to be found worthy by God to have your name in that book and to inherit a place in that kingdom. But no one is worthy. We all die. We will all die in our own sins. Your good deeds, your relative goodness compared to the rest of the people is not worthy enough. But if you approach him, and you ask him for his enduring name, for his worthy name, he will give his name to you. And so you will be found worthy in him and be written in the book of life. And with that name also comes a place. You know what Jesus is doing now? Jesus said, "In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you." What's that place like? We don't know a lot about it, but we know this. All who are there in that place are very pleased. They're very pleased. It's a place of joy. It's a place that endures forever. And if you have found your name and your place in Jesus Christ, will you stop trying to make a name and find a place in these other things? Will you submit to him? Will you seek first his kingdom and his righteousness instead of a perishing kingdom? Let's pray. We come again to you, Lord Jesus, and we ask that you would give us your name, your worthy name, and that you would grant us by your Spirit, the ability to put down all of our futile strivings after other things that will not last and will not endure and will not satisfy. Make us to find our name and our place in you in this life. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, as we close, we sing together from the Trinity Hymnal number 127. Let's stand and sing together.
We have such strength.
Receive the benediction. The Lord your Redeemer says, you are not your own. You were bought with a price. You are a precious people of my own possession. He says, I have loved you with a love that will not end. Go love as I have loved you. Amen.